You're listening to Women in Leadership Podcast, episode 17. Hi, I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Welcome to another episode of Women in Leadership Podcast, the podcast that empowers you to reach your full potential, whether you're already in a leadership role or you are an aspiring leader. Joining me on today's show is Katie Anquitel. Katie's the Operations Director for Manpower Group New Zealand. She currently lives in Wellington, New Zealand with her Kiwi husband and her two-year-old son. She's been in New Zealand for 4 years, but New Zealand is the seventh country she's lived and worked in. And prior to moving to New Zealand, Katie worked in the recruitment, helping large Fortune 500 tech companies build internal recruitment capability. And her previous employers, very impressive. They include Amazon, Microsoft, and Expedia. She's very passionate about people and culture in the workplace and women in leadership. And on today's show, Katie's going to share why we must first change ourselves and what that means for us as leaders, the importance of being present, especially when it comes to staff engagement, and how to stay motivated, especially in the face of obstacles. So welcome to the show, Katie.
Thanks so much, Anne-Marie. It's a pleasure to be here.
Katie, you've been really fortunate throughout your career. You've had great mentors and sponsors, which have been both male and female. And through these mentors and sponsors, you've learned that credit must be given where credit is due and that everyone deserves equal opportunities. And in fact, one of your mentors, Mara Swan, she identified that recently women aren't looking for a handout. They're just looking for a level playing field. And I'd love you to speak a little bit more about that, because this is something that you say is very true for you and in your career.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, often I have people who will say to me, wow, you've been so lucky in your career. And I always think that word luck is really interesting, because luck really had very little to do with it. It was actually a whole heck of a lot of hard work coupled with fantastic opportunities to work for great brands with great leadership. I have to say that never in my career working for those great brands have I ever expected anything to be handed to me. And people often say, well, how have you moved on so much, you know, moved on and up in your career? Doing my job excellently, exceeding expectations regularly, as well as demonstrating capability above and beyond the requirements of my job is how I've done that. So it isn't easy, but that's how you continue growing organizationally, professionally, and personally.
Yeah. And Katie, just briefly, you have said that, you know, it's very, your mentors and sponsors have certainly been influential in your career. Looking back, would you say the support that you needed and obviously advice that they've given you, had you not had that mentors, would you have maybe made the decisions that you made and taken on projects that you made, or have those been really influential in where you are today?
You know, unequivocally, I think as I've grown in my career, and I think this is really important as well, I think no matter how senior you are, no matter how accomplished you are, the opportunity to identify and work with a mentor is almost more important than it is as you're moving up. I think people get, as they become more senior in organizations, they feel like they have to do it on their own. And that certainly is not the case, and certainly not the best way to go about it. I think in terms of my experience, unequivocally, the folks that have advocated for me and been sponsors for me throughout my career have had a huge influence on the decisions and risks that I've taken. And I think that's a really important piece. And it's not just about, you know, challenging you to be great at what you're doing in that moment, but it's also challenging you to look at where you're willing to take risks and step up and step out.
You know, sometimes having that mentor or that sponsor, someone who may have been in a similar situation as you, someone who you can get some feedback, sometimes even just to explain a few things, and when you talk it out to them, you kind of, oh, okay, well, I know what I need to do now. So many women I hear continue to struggle on their own. Just before we dive into the other elements that you're going to share today, for someone who's listening today and has not got a sponsor, has not got a mentor, what are some things that you can advise her as far as, okay, this is what you need to look at out for in a sponsor, perhaps even approaching someone, hey, would you be able to mentor me? Can you share some insights on those areas? Because I think these are key for women.
Sure. I think, you know, in the first instance, you need to be deliberate about where it is that you want to go and what the gap is for you to get there. Mm. And I think once you're clear about where it is that you want to go, you can start to identify individuals that are either there or have achieved beyond whatever there is. Mm. The second piece, and I think this is really important, or at least has been really important for me, is there needs to be a values alignment and to have a successful mentorship. For me, you know, those values from a professional perspective tend to resonate in a personal way as well, which for me are to be bold, be kind, and be authentic. Mm. I look for those in a mentor, and have found that I'm much more successful in making the most out of those mentorship relationships when those values are present. Mm-hmm. The third sort of piece is in approaching a mentor, I think it's being able to identify those things. So it's quite common, and Sheryl Sandberg and Mara, and a number of other women that are quite well spoken on the topic of women in leadership have talked about they get requests continually for people who want them to mentor them. I think you need to be able to articulate where it is that you're at, where it is that you want to go. So that deliberate piece, the values alignment to the mentor. And that's how you would approach a mentor. Mm. So that would be my feedback to people who are looking looking for mentorship.
Wise words, and I love the way that you said you're deliberate and focused, because approaching a mentor and someone who can see similar values, if a mentee or potential mentee approached and this mentor, potential mentor, could see that there are similar values, in your instance, bold, kind. And what was the other one? Bold, kind, and authentic. Yeah, both. I love those three. Yeah, so very important. Then, of course, that mentor too can really, it's something that they can feel compelled to say yes to, rather than trying to having to carry someone. And we're not saying that, people who are approaching, but there has to be that reciprocal relationship there, doesn't there?
Absolutely. And I think, I absolutely think that it needs to be reciprocal, and a mentor who has had the opportunity to mentor a number of people will want a mentee who is very deliberate.
Thank you for sharing that before we dived into the show. The reason I said that is because just recently I went to an event and there was a young woman, and she would have to be late 20s, early 30s. And what she has achieved here in Australia and even globally, it's just absolutely incredible. And right throughout her presentation, she referred back to various mentors that she had. Mm-hmm. And she did say, similar to what you've saying today, had it not been for the mentors, she probably would not have made various decisions, because it really were requiring her to stretch out of her comfort zone, take risks which she would never have taken had it not been able to talk through it with her mentor. And so I thought I need to grab that lesson, and thank you for sharing that. So let's dive in. You said that it's important that we must change ourselves first. Talk about what that means and why that's important to us as leaders.
I think going back to that piece that I mentioned from a value-based perspective, the being authentic, I think in order to really push the boundaries of women in leadership and look towards creating a level playing field, you have to lead from an authentic place of wanting that change to occur. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably, if you can't start from there, you're not going to get past get-go. And that's for men and women. You know, this is not a, you know, women in leadership is not a women issue. It's a people and culture issue. Mm-hmm. I think that be authentic piece, I think in order to really create a step change for women in leadership, it has to come from an authentic place, whether or not you're a male CEO, a female CEO, a female director, a male director, whatever it is. gender is not the issue. It's about people and culture and leadership.
Yeah. And I think for, you know, people listening today, authenticity is so important. And I think as leaders or anyone working in the workplace, the ability to have self-awareness, what are our strengths? What is authenticity to us? Because when we go from that place, I think then, and playing on our strengths and allowing ourselves to shine, then we really can show up and make an impact in the workplace. How many people, and I'm sure you've met many throughout your career or heard of them, who try and put on a mask, try to show up as something that they're absolutely not. And this can be so draining, and it shows, doesn't it, in the workplace. People can tell when we're not being authentic.
I recently responded to a woman, a colleague of mine that's actually writing a book about women in leadership. And I talked about the power of vulnerability in leadership. And I think that's a really important message for me as a leader, not necessarily as a woman, but I think we need to give more importance to the value of emotional intelligence in addition to intellectual intelligence in leadership. And I, you know, I think I talk about the power of vulnerability. You don't need to remove that. Again, you don't need to change women. You need to change the people and culture and support women in leadership roles.
What would you say to a company then who really wants to create a culture that empowers and inspires both men and women? However, maybe they are struggling because the culture that they've had tends to be more supportive to men, or tends to have a culture that aligns a little bit more to, you know, the dominant male kind of energy. What would you say to companies who do want to start to encourage women to take on more senior leadership roles? What kind of things have you seen work really well?
I think unequivocally you need the C-suite sponsorship. I don't think so. My first question back to this organization, if I wasn't talking to the CEO, would be to say, what is the CEO's investment in this? Why has this investment now, you know, why now? Why are they coming? Without that, again, you won't get past get go. You have to have, you know, leadership buy-in. And again, you know, I hate to keep harping on this. It's got to come from an authentic place. And even if that place is to say, I don't know much about this. This seems to be the right thing. I don't know entirely why, but I want to understand why it's the right thing. We can work with that. And, you know, my feedback, you know, to those CEOs and those leaders is generally, you know, we're in a situation now where we have an opportunity to say, not only is this the right thing to do, but businesses perform better when there's more women in leadership roles.
Yeah, absolutely. So statistics and studies say that unequivocally.
Yeah. So if you're not doing it, you're actually doing a disservice to the performance of your business.
I heard a while ago, and I can't recall who said this, so I'll have to do some research to see if I can get the person who said this, but he was in the US and for, you know, a top 500 company. He said, women in the workplace are like canaries in the coal mine. When they start leaving, it doesn't take long for the male senior leaders or even people working in the workforce start to notice the effects. And so this is really important, isn't it?
It's extraordinary. And I think that gets back a little bit to that putting value in the leadership function that sits not just an IQ, but an EQ as well. Because when you bring EQ into the leadership function, there's a huge impact on culture.
Yes.
And on people. And that's I think the impact that you're talking about there when women leave.
Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't take to realize the difference.
Well, let's talk in, this segues beautifully to the next point about the importance of being present, especially when it comes to staff engagement, because if you don't have an engaged staff, that certainly is going to show up in performance and productivity as well.
It is. I think it's interesting. I you know, I talk about being present. I think it's really hard to do, you know, when we're in fast paced, you know, high performance environments. And it can be challenging not to attempt to multitask, you know, and not be present with our staff. I think for me, the evolution of becoming a leader really came from this idea that I was going to spend a heck of a lot less time managing people and spend a whole lot more time leading from the front. And that meant needing to be present in every engagement and do one thing at a time. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, focus on what matters most. And that to me is the difference between someone who manages and someone who leads.
From a point of view of a person, if you're speaking to your leader or you know, someone on the board or the CEO, if you haven't got their full attention, you can tell that they're just not listening to you and you don't feel appreciated. Now, even if their response or the decision that they make is not necessarily the decision that you wanted them to make, the fact that they've been given you or given you an opportunity to be heard, that in itself is huge, isn't it, to team?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's an interesting, again, you know, evolution of awareness from a leadership perspective. You know, a lot of leaders now are taking up mindfulness practices because they see an increase in their staff's engagement. And mm-hmm. that's for that reason, and that reason alone, is that they're listening, they're actively listening, and the people feel heard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's science and data and research that supports the fact that when your staff, when you're present for your staff from a leadership perspective, your staff is more productive. Mm-hmm. So again, why the heck aren't we doing this?
Yeah.
You know, it's and you know, the other piece that is I see systemically across client groups globally, this is not a, you know, an Australia, New Zealand or Asia Pacific issue. It's a global issue, is that managers spend a lot of time managing poor performers and a whole lot less time supporting, challenging and bringing up their high performers. Leaders spend a whole lot of time encouraging their high performers. And I think there's a difference.
Yes, very important. And I think also too, this whole topic of multitasking, and in this instance, we're talking about being present mm-hmm. when you are speaking to someone on your team or within a meeting, mm-hmm. whatever it may be. On another level too, when you think of mindfulness and being intentional on the tasks that we are working on, and this is such a good, being a good role model to our team too. Studies have shown that when we are multitasking and doing too many things at once, the things that we are working on will often not, because we're stretched so thin. And in fact, I try not to now multitask because I have deleted, very significant files off my computer because I was multitasking. I was not present.
That's true.
And so it's a huge lesson for all of us.
For me, you know, that was a huge wake-up call. Multitasking actually doesn't work. What do you mean? I've built my whole career on being busy.
Right.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So that was a huge wake up call for me, is that multitasking isn't actually being more productive. It's being less productive.
It is. It is. Yeah. We've had to completely retrain, because I still remember when we were looking for team, it was the ability to multitask, you know, it was often part of a job description. And can you multitask? Whereas now, of course, yeah.
I know. It's unbelievable. And the debunking of multitasking is a fascinating concept and was a huge wake-up call for me. And, you know, it's something, you know, you look at memes on the internet, and I belong to a lot of women in leadership and mothers in leadership groups, and a lot of the humor surrounding women in leadership or mothers who are working mothers is around that I'm always multitasking, being pulled in 5 million directions, doing all the, you know, and that's the story that's told. So it's a really interesting time when we've now learned that that's actually not the most effective way to lead.
Yes.
To step away from that and step back into being more present, with our people or with whatever the given task is at that moment.
Absolutely. A huge lesson. It almost used to be a badge of honor to be able to multitask, and that busyness, you know, if you, oh, how are you? Oh, I'm so busy. But, you know, as a leader, are we taking on tasks which really we shouldn't, because it's inhibiting us to be the best leader that we can? And so this is a huge reminder. And if we're working on tasks that are stopping us from being able to be more present, able to be more intentional, be more mindful across the board in how we show up, then we need to take a serious step back and look at, okay, what am I doing that perhaps needs to no longer be focused on? Yeah, so true. Yeah.
The busy badge of honor is a tricky one to put on the table and walk away from, because it's, you know, I think probably if someone would have asked me 5 years ago, I would have said that's why I've been successful. So I can do more than other people can do. And now I would say something very different to that, but that's because of a different level of awareness that I have around what that actually means, around what busy actually means.
That's right. You know, if you dare say, have a minute to sit at your desk and just be able to breathe, it's like, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong?
Exactly.
Nothing's wrong. It just means everything is as it should be. And anyway, we can often create our own chaos, can't we? Because we are. We're just so, or we can, if we allow ourselves, be driven by the constant need to be busy and to be handling something. So when everything's working smoothly, I have actually worked with leaders like that who said, you know what, when I had everything working correctly, I would create my own chaos. And that was often to leave things to the last minute. And they realize that they work and they function so much better when there is stress around. But as a leader, we need to look at, okay, so how best does our team operate? And a lot of the other people in that team were finding it very difficult, and a huge, huge self-awareness lesson for that particular leader. Now let's get on to the next point, because I know that this can often be something that keeps many, not just women, men as well, stuck. And that is obstacles and challenges. What are some insights that you can share about how we can stay motivated when we do have a challenge, when we are faced with an obstacle?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one, because I think I think from a style perspective, it's quite unique. For me, when it comes to challenges, success is never been an option for me. It was always that success was always meeting expectations, not exceeding them. It was what came after that that was exceeding them. So when it comes to obstacles, for me, if I say what I do and do what I say, I believe you can pretty much work through just about any obstacle that's put in your way. When it comes to motivation, and I think that's a different sort of conversation, but related. I mean, if you end up in a situation where you don't have the passion or the interest in overcoming the obstacles, then I would really start questioning your motivation. And I think it gets back to being deliberate. So, you know, and being clear and being able to distill that motivation and articulate it to your leadership or to your mentors or whoever that is by saying, this is what I'm doing now. I'm sensing that that for me, I might want to be looking at something else and be clear about what that looks like. For me, motivation becomes an issue when I'm not challenged. And that doesn't necessarily mean chaos. It means large, complex solutions, global, corporate. It can fit into any number of different categories, but I need to have some of what I'm doing on a daily, weekly basis being focused on solving complex problems. And when that isn't there, other things start to feel quite a bit more taxing. So I guess maybe that's, for me, my feedback would be understand what it is that fuels your drive and your passion, and ensure that you are getting a piece of that in your regular day-to-day. And if you're not, that you're clearly articulating what it is that you want to do to shift that.
Very important. I think self-awareness and, again, what is it that does motivate you is so key. And it's incredible how many people aren't really aware of that. Or even when you're talking about values, they're not really clear. And often what ends up happening is their values are challenged, they're misaligned with the corporation or whatever is happening. And it's then that they're experiencing the consequences of that being challenged. And I think also too, as women and some of the women that I've spoken to, They'll often, when it comes to a challenge and sometimes, or on an obstacle, sometimes the decision is no, we're going to walk away from that. That's the best decision for the company, for the team. Yet they can take that on as a personal failure. And I think as a leader, by taking those things personally and as a failure, then that can certainly keep us stuck, can't it? Because it's not something personal. Here are the issues. What can we do? You know, is it worthwhile us tackling this problem, or is it something that can be better off focusing our attention and energy on another project or challenge? Yes?
I think that's one of the, I think you make a really good point about the taking it personally. That's, again, something, if you would have asked me 5 years ago why I thought I had success in my career, I probably would have said that I take everything I do personally, that has shifted dramatically for me in the last 5 years. And the ability to separate what is about me and what is not about me, because you need to be able to do that in order to focus on what matters most. I do think that tends to be an affliction of those who lead from a place of higher EQ. I'm not saying that's, again, it's not a male or female thing, although we do know that scientifically that tends to be higher on the female side. That can be a really big challenge, you know, it's not taking it personally, not always taking it personally, yes. I guess.
Oh, I love to speaking with you. We can probably continue to talk for hours and share. So what would be one last piece of advice, words of wisdom that you would like to share with people today, Katie?
I guess from a, you know, from a women in leadership perspective, if I go back to sort of what I started with from a values-based perspective, which is kind of how I was raised by my mother, who was an incredible inspiration for me, but be bold, be kind, be authentic, be bold. Don't ever shy away from asking for what you want and moving in that direction. Be kind. You can deliver really difficult messages and still be kind and respectful. And be authentic. Operate from a place that is true to who you are, and look for roles and opportunities that will be aligned to who you are as a person. And I think when you operate from those values, or in my experience, when you operate from those values, it's not about having an opportunity. It's about choosing from a multitude of different opportunities. So I guess that would be what I leave people with.
Terrific. And Katie, you are representing Manpower Group in New Zealand. I'd be happy if you wanted to share just a, you know, briefly who they are, and if people are listening today would like to get in contact, what's the best way?
Sure. So we, Manpower Group, is one of the largest workforce solution companies in the world. We're in 83 countries globally. In New Zealand, we operate 4 brands. We operate Manpower, which is a white-collar, blue-collar, light industrial and trades staffing business. We operate Experius, which is a IT and engineering professional staffing business. We operate Right Management, which is a career management, HR outsourcing, and outplacement business. And we operate Manpower Group Solutions, which is an outsourcing business. So we stay quite busy in New Zealand. It's a large, complex business, but it's really exciting. So our focus in New Zealand is helping businesses transform how they manage talent and their workforce solutions. If anyone would like to get in touch, I'd be more than happy to hear from them. My email address is Katie, K-A-T-Y, .anquetil, A-N-Q-U-E-T-I-L, @nz.manpowergroup.com.
Fantastic. And Katie, we'll put all of those contact detail on the show notes. So thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks so much, Anne-Marie. It was a real pleasure. It was a highlight of my day.
Fantastic.
Had a great time.
Now it's over to you. Katie and I want you to join the conversation. So let us know, what was one aha? I know you would have had many, but what is the biggest aha that you've taken away from the insights that Katie shared today? And what's the action step you're going to take in the next 24 hours to get into action on that? So to join that conversation, go to annemariecross.com/podcast17. Leave your comments there below the show notes. And I look forward to reading that. Now, again, the link is annemariecross.com/podcast17. Now, before we go, an inspirational tip from our sponsor, Breaking the Confidence Barrier. The greatest prison people live in is the fear of what other people will think. Now, is this you? Do you live in fear of what other people will think about you? So maybe that fear keeps you silent when you know something is happening that isn't right in the workplace. Or maybe you keep your hand down when you know you should be putting your hand up for that special project or that new role. So make a commitment to yourself today to stop living in fear of what other people will think about you. Now, if you like this inspirational message, then go to www.breakingtheconfidencebarrier.com to access more tips and strategies on how you can break through your confidence barrier and step forward confidently in your life and career to reach your full potential. Now, that brings us to the end of another episode, and I do hope that you'll join me again next week. Remember, subscribe to our iTunes channel. The link is annemariecross.com/podcast iTunes. When you do subscribe, that means that you're going to be the very first person to learn about our new episode and be inspired and empowered every week, like I know you were today listening to Katie. Again, that link is annemariecross.com/podcast iTunes. And while you're there, if you've got a couple of minutes, leave a comment and a rating. That would be super awesome. See you next week. Make it a great one. Bye, Katie.